Hello and welcome to the 15th episode of Radio Thule, the Pan-Nordic podcast from nordiskradio.se. My name is Lucas Lindgren, and with me today I have Andreas, Halvdan and Tarje. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening. Yeah, we don't really have that much to talk about today. We have in Finland, and then we have Beowulf Part 2. But we might talk about some other things if they come up. Have the last month been good for you guys?
Absolutely. I just got back from Ireland, and it was great to just get a bit of a change in scenery. It was very interesting as well to see how it's changed. I think it's a lot different than if you've been there maybe 10 years ago. I think there's it looks a lot different now than it
was. It like vacation or more a work thing? Or
no, it wasn't work. It was just a very short vacation, just to just to take it easy and to get, you know, away from the snow and into the rain. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've seen the riots and so on they've done against like specific hotels and so on.
Yeah,
where like migrants have raped young girls in the area and so on.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't really see any of that, but I mean, I can see it as I said, like there's a lot of really many foreigners. Like you know, I was there for a few days, and you know, there wasn't that many Irish people working in, you know, the tourist locations for sure. It was there was outside my hotel, there's like Somali restaurants and Uyghur restaurants and all these exotic things that I've never seen in my life. There's a lot of what do we call it? I guess they call it culture.
what the fuck do Somalis serve?
Like, I don't know. And I looked in the door as well, and there was like a big television screen, like with a fireplace on it. And they were all just sort of hanging around drinking tea. And yeah, I don't know. I wasn't going to go in there and ask that. I wouldn't eat it either.
No.
Yeah.
Sounds like the last food that you would want to try.
Yeah, I wouldn't start there either if I was to try Irish delights. That's for sure.
Ireland is a pretty weird country because they've been really Catholic for a long time. Aren't they like really conservative when it comes to like abortion and so on?
Yeah.
And then they go from this like really conservative society to just being like the rest of the West. That really shows that like conservatism and religious conservatism doesn't really work.
Yeah,
when you're part of the same political system, you need to be really revolutionary if you want to break away from it.
It's universalist. Yeah. So as long as
as
the can become Catholics, it's A-OK.
And they are already Catholics, aren't they? Like Africa, like isn't Catholicism one of the fastest growing religions, maybe even over Islam?
Yeah. Because I think that's South America. I think they're more Protestant, but they're gonna let in anyway. So,
I mean, like Sinn Féin and all those things, they're like really left when it comes to immigration and things. Like, it seems the only place where they're really nationalistic, well, that's when they talk about the English. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like completely wrong focus, like be dominated by. As long as the English aren't there.
Yeah, and my impression as well, it's funny because I'm half English, and as you could guess, but, you know, I felt so many similarities just walking around in terms of, you know, how they've made their urban sprawl and, you know, the food, you know, they might call it an Irish breakfast or an Irish, you know, Sunday lunch or whatever you call it, right? But it was just... exactly the same as what the English eat, and you know, their pub culture is so similar. So, you know, I think they really want, you know, they've taken up the euro and they really want to be part of the mainland, but they still share a lot with the United Kingdom. So
yeah, it's almost like they are racially related in some way.
Yeah, they, I mean,
who
yeah,
might have thought.
Exactly. Yeah.
I just came back from a Catholic country myself, Poland.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was at the Independence Day march. So you had a lot of Swedish people there, actually, from the active clubs.
Yeah. They usually go there. So the Independence March has already been. Is it always this time of year, or?
Yes, it's like they're like we have the 17th of May in Norway. It's their national day, yeah. Right?
Absolutely.
So why do you say? I mean, I don't know how much you know about Ireland. So why is Ireland got so many more immigrants now compared to like somewhere like Poland? Because you know they burn. You know the Irish they burn for Ireland, right? You know, I mean, it may be a very recent.
I think it has to do with communism. That Poland is ex-communist country. It's probably that in some way.
All the former communist countries have less immigrants than Western Europe.
Yeah. Okay. And do you like? Because my theory as well is that the British propaganda machine is the most powerful there is, and I think it's really strong. And I don't know if Ireland also they get a bit influenced by that. I don't know if anyone has any opinions on that at all. But they have a really really strong institutions that are very good at analyzing the population and building trends and changing behaviors and things like that. But I don't know.
I would say that in combination with them going into the European Union, because before they went into the EU, like Ireland was a totally different country and the EU changed it completely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that and you're also seeing the most resistance in, arguably the most resistance in all of Europe, so it becomes extra important to fill the whole island with
Yeah.
That's my guess, at least.
Yeah, but the Irish, they do have, and I don't want any Irish who are listening to take it the wrong way, but they are a bit, you can feel like they're a bit, wilder, right? You know, they're a bit more, I don't know how to explain it,
they're
a Nordic person to an Irish person, right? You know, that it's quite stark, the difference. So I can definitely see why there's a lot of pushback coming from Ireland. So
it's not that long ago that you had like guerrilla warfare on the streets in Ireland, so it's not really surprising.
Would you see something like that in Finland? Like that kind of guerrilla stuff? I doubt it, right?
I would like to say yes, but not really, no.
No, yeah.
It's
maybe in the independence war between the reds and the whites.
Yeah.
I
was about to say that's just 100 years ago, but for the Irish, it's 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. You have people alive that remember all those happenings.
Yeah. But yeah, I can definitely recommend, Dublin's a bit small, but the Botanical Garden, very nice. And they also have what's it called, Natural Museum, which is also free and really beautiful. So I definitely recommend it. And that's all I have about Ireland.
Yeah, we're going to have the Independence Day marches in Finland.
Yeah.
When is it? In 2 weeks, a little more than 2 weeks.
Yeah,
the 6th of December or something. Or
yeah. And no, I don't really know much about it yet. They just said that there's going to be something new this year.
The Salem March is on the same day, right?
Yeah.
No, the 9th.
The 9th?
No?
Okay.
No.
The 6th. Yeah. Exactly. He died on the 9th. It's the same day, but it was the best weekend to have it on. But Finland and Sweden is separated by sea, at least, so it won't destroy it all too much. But question to Tarje about the independence march in Poland. What was the atmosphere there?
Oh, the atmosphere was one of the better atmospheres I've been at, to be honest. It was a really cool experience, to be honest, yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't there like a more radical block there too?
Yeah, that was the part I was in, correct.
Is it most of it, it's like 90% of it is like boomer patriotism or close to it?
Well, yeah, I've seen they've marched with like banners where they have like the hammer and the sickle crossed over and also like the swastika.
Yeah, well, you have all types of different types of like patriots and nationalists and right wingers there, but it's not only like a boomer nationalist. You also have like other like younger Polish nationalist groups, but they are not like openly fascist like we are.
What about the Ukrainians? Are they also, do they like partake? Are there, is a pushback against them at these kind of things, or?
This year it was kind of complicated because the Polish people are kind of tired of all the Ukrainian refugees there. So they had like pictures of like Bandera, like they crossed out, and they also had like anti-Bandera chants, which is basically like the hero of Ukrainian nationalism. But like his group during World War II, they killed like something like 100,000 Polish people, which is why they have this like older rivalry, I guess. So now that they are like trying to push an anti-Ukrainian message to get the refugees out, they go back to history.
But I mean, it's cheeky as well that the Ukrainians, like, they want all this isn't international support, but you know they can't really give up Bandera there. It's funny how that works.
The Ukrainians at the march, they don't really have an option to like go and confront people because they will all get beat up, so they just kind of have to like put their head down.
So there's definitely there's a building a lot of pushback against Ukraine right now. Is that also against the war, or is it just Ukrainians in general because there's come so many of them?
Well, at least in the like nationalist, the Black Bloc, they support like the Ukrainian war effort against Russia. But so in the Black Bloc it was basically anti-Ukrainian refugee, but in the more like a boomer part, it was probably both.
Okay, interesting. And how long does such a march take if anyone was to take part in such a march? Is it several hours or is it 1 hour?
It took a few hours, correct.
Okay, cool.
Do you have anything more from your recent travels, or should we go on with the show?
No, that was probably it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun that you guys travel a lot. We have a guy in Arnest who travels a lot too. It's always fun to hear stories and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of, I may be a racist, but I'm a big fan of seeing cultures in its true form. I just don't think
Yeah,
when you
that's
mix
how it should be.
browns and reds and you get a brown icky mess, right? And yeah, I prefer to deal with my own problems. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it should be. Cultures and races being separated. And you can like travel and actually have like good-minded exchange between peoples and cultures and so on. That's a lot more productive than
As long as they're
what's
racist, then
happening
I
right
can
now.
get along with them.
Yeah,
Exactly, yeah.
absolutely.
The
Polish people are pretty racist and anti-Semitic, to be honest, so they're pretty easy to get along with.
Didn't like the Polish Communist Party, like kick out the Jews in the 60s or 70s or something like that.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, one of Sweden's most horrible Jews, Jerzy Sarnecki. He was pretty influential in getting multiculturalism in Sweden and the immigration to start and so on in like the 60s, 70s, and 80s and so on. And I believe he or like his family got kicked out from Poland in that wave.
Peter
During the communist era?
I think in the 60s or 70s when the communists kicked him out.
Peter Wolodarski's family too is the head of a big newspaper in Sweden.
Yeah, it's almost like they were right in kicking them out. Because in Sweden, they haven't really been that nice to the host population, if I say so myself.
We should probably think about doing the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been trying politically to do it for a few years. I can inform you all. Yeah. There was one Finnish news article, and that I thought was pretty interesting, and it was regarding Lucia. And Lucia is a pretty big tradition in the Nordics. I think it's also a pretty big tradition in Italy. But in the Nordics, it's pretty big, and it's on the 13th of December. If I'm not wrong. And yeah, I read a bit about it earlier today. And it comes from an Italian saint, or like a Roman saint, from I think about the 300s AD, who tried to like save Christians who were persecuted in one of the last persecutions in Rome. And I think in the Wikipedia article it said that this Santa Lucia, she ran in the catacombs, Roman catacombs, with food, and then she put the candles on her head so she can so she can carry more food instead of holding a candle, something like that.
Was it those buns that she served? The
might be ones? Might be. And then if you look at some Lucias, they have like a red garment on their stomach, and that's supposed to like symbolize the blood of martyrdom and so on. But that's pretty deep into the Christian lore. I've grown up with the Lucia tradition for all my life, and it's the only Christianity is maybe in like in the songs they sing about Bethlehem and so on. But for the most part, it's only like it's a tradition where you put a blonde Swedish girl in the front to like lighten up the atmosphere when it's getting dark and it's cold, and then you put like the most beautiful blonde Swedish girl to like symbolize light and a bit maybe martyrdom, but it's like to symbolize light and something good and so on. And yeah, they've this might come as a shock, but they exchanged this blonde Swedish girl for or basically, and it's not so fun.
Yeah, someone didn't get the memo.
Yeah, they haven't really read up on it.
Who's doing it? Is it all over the country, or is it this
particular... Yeah, all over the country. At least they try. A lot of like I believe in my school they shows like a Swedish boy as a Lucia, and he wasn't like a fag or anything. He was just like the class clown or something like that. I don't believe he actually was a fag or something like that. He was just a regular dude who was a funny dude, and he liked like being in the center and being funny. And then the teachers, being like cultural Marxist, wanted him to do it. And he just did it because it was fun. So yeah. Everything from that to like to trans people and so on.
But I mean, putting a class clown as like the one in front is a big risk as well, right? It shows a bit where their headspace is, right?
Yeah, yeah. They just want to break the circle. Yeah. And you might think like, yeah, but they're like feminists and women are oppressed and the patriarchy and so on, but no, women can't have anything for their own. White women can't. And that's when they try to remove the white Swedish girl as a Lucia and put in something else. That's an example of that they don't really care about women, even though they say they do. Like the traditions that have been reserved for women, they want to put some other things in their stead. And yeah, I actually read on the English Wikipedia page called St. Lucy's Day. And then it says under, in the Nordic countries, it says the celebration of Lucia in its current form began in the 20th century and gained popularity in 1927 after a Stockholm newspaper sponsored a competition to select Lucia. The winner that year was a dark-haired girl, but over time it became customary to choose a typical Swedish blonde. And I'm not against brunettes. Brunettes are also white, but they're not choosing brunettes. They are choosing and but it looks better with a blonde. It's like tradition and so on. But yeah,
it's like the picture you get in front of you is a blonde, like perfect Aryan woman.
Yeah,
there are probably hundreds of Lucias, like in every school and in every like county. They have their own, and then there's also a nationwide Lucia that gets chosen every year.
Yeah, and if you like, if you compare it to like American culture, it's like in American films where they have the school prom, and they choose like a prom king and a prom queen. Getting to be Lucia is like getting chosen to be like prom queen. It's supposed to be like the most beautiful girl. It's supposed to be. It's like prom king and queen, but there's no king. There's only a queen. And it's supposed to be like maybe the most popular girl or the most beautiful girl or the most like, yeah. But she has to be beautiful in some way. So it's like creating an idol, not really Christian, but yeah, but it's a martyr. But it's a really nice tradition, and the songs can be really beautiful. I remember like listening to in school, in high school, when they sing, and it can all, when you listen to like the Lucia, because they have guys there also, they have a bit different dresses. More like comical, but in a traditional way, and a lot of other girls. And when they all sing, it can almost be like a spiritual experience.
Mm. It's really, really cute when kids have their Lucia.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you say in English? Lucia trains.
Mm.
But like their Lucia procession, maybe.
Yeah. Absolutely, and when they break away from like the traditional Lucia tradition, they people actually get mad. But it seems like Swedes get madder than Finland Swedes. When looking at like the Finland Swedes and their articles and so on, it seems like they are more liberal than regular Swedes because they probably don't have as much multiculturalism. I don't know.
Could be.
Yeah, because it seems like regular Swedes are actually pretty fed up with and have actually segregated. But it seems like the Finland Swedes are just living on their west coast and just chilling and being liberal.
Mm, it's easy, easy for them to just like sit and be good and love when they're totally separated from them.
Yeah,
whereas in Sweden, you have grenades flying around your head and shooting everywhere.
Yeah, it's like 1.5 hours from where I live. A 12-year-old, he took a handgun, and shot 6 people. But the handgun, the theory is that the handgun was too heavy, so he couldn't lift it properly. So he shot 6 people in the legs. Like women and like teenagers and so on, just regular people on the streets. And the police got a warning beforehand that he was going to do it, but nobody stopped him and so on. So yeah,
that's insane.
And he was like 12 or 13. But Andreas, as I see, like the Swedish parts of Finland, they seem like really really white, but it's probably getting more and more multicultural, I guess.
Yeah, because when the come here, they get to choose which language they want to quote-unquote integrate in. And of course, they always choose Finnish. because why would they choose Swedish?
Yeah, yeah.
So both yes and no, but they're trying to solve it by busing. So they're going to start to share the with and bus them out to schools.
Some for you, some for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
They really like the busing. That's a thing they do in Sweden also all the time. And sometimes parents and so on get really mad, but they get mad for like 2-3 weeks. Some extreme cases, they might go out and have like a peaceful demonstration. But after that, they accept it.
Mm, yeah, like with most things.
Yeah, yeah. I read some on the Swedish Wikipedia page for Lucia, and they try to like counter argue the point that men shouldn't be Lucia with some like facts that some men actually were Lucia already in the 1800s. But it's not for the same reason, I can probably guess. Now, they probably had some traditional reason for it at that time in the 1800s, but it's not the same reason they do it now. Now they do it for like communist, multiculturalist reasons. It's not what they did in that time, I'm pretty sure.
Why is the argument there that we should have traditions? What do they mean?
They mean nothing.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Nice. Yeah. But it's like they know that traditions are important to people, but they also know that the traditions don't fit their worldview. So in some way, they need to keep traditions to keep the people happy, but they also need to change the traditions to not lose their power.
Mm.
They're trying to balance that board. And yeah.
One more thing about the Finnish Lucia. Maybe you didn't see that many negative comments, but I read in the article last
some,
year.
I actually saw some with like 20 likes and so
yeah,
on.
Yeah, there are some, but
pretty small articles.
But last year we had a black Lucia, and yeah. People didn't like that, of course. But this year they had an all white Lucia, or the candidates were all white, and people really liked that. And that was also problematic. So they had to delete comments because people loved the white candidates too much.
Yeah. Yeah, there was an article on Nordfront that was published the 9th of November. And it says that Folkhälsan, the organization that arranges the Lucia selection in Finland, claims that it has removed a number of racist comments from its social media after this year's Lucia candidates were presented. The racist comments appear to consist of people being very happy that all the Lucia candidates this year are white. Yeah. And being happy over being white, that's like bad.
Yeah, it's like another Holocaust.
So hateful.
Yeah. And this is what anti-racism actually is. It's not. It's always being anti-white.
Hmm.
This old trope with anti-racism being anti-white, it's actually true. And this this happening, this article is really good evidence of that. People are being happy that it's a white Lucia. And that's racist. And then they remove the comment. Some Lucia coordinator called Stina Heikkilä at Folkhälsan said it is clearly a way of expressing racism. But then why did they choose all white people? Aren't they the racists then?
Yeah, Folkhälsan are the real racists.
Yeah.
I had an exchange with a guy in the comment section, and he said that I should start speaking Finnish, or we were writing in Swedish. But he said that I should start like speaking Finnish and identifying with being Finnish, so... Like can be a Finnish Lucia, but I need to like be completely 100% Finnish.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe Finns and Swedes aren't like totally similar, but we're both white at least.
Yeah, but you need to understand that you are an evil colonizer, but the that come to Finland, they are helpless people that just need help. But you are evil. you are part of a 800-year-old scheme of destroying the working Finnish man.
Yeah.
As you said to me. Very horrible. And yeah, this Heikele girl, she also said, quote, they get a disturbing feeling from what they see in the comment sections. It's a terrible social and discussion climate we have today. I am incredibly saddened that things are like this. But the thing is that things are like this, it's like they're describing it as a current thing. Things have always been like this. If they tried the same thing 100 years ago, 200, 300, 400, 500, the exact same reactions would happen. And the longer you go back, the more extreme they would probably be. If you tried to do the same like the Viking Age or the 1500s or so on, you would probably get like a Lutheran Inquisition on your ass. They would like kill you or something, or put you in house arrest.
Stomped down in a bog.
Yeah, absolutely. If you did it long, long ago. So yeah, things are like this. It's not the people reacting negatively who are different and have just now started acting weird. It's the traitors and the cultural Marxists, it's they who have started acting weird and doing this new destructive thing. We have always been like this, at least like the regular racists.
Yeah, it's just they're just anti-white. It would be better if they could just admit it. We love we hate white people. Deal with it.
Yeah.
It's this constant gaslighting and lying that like gets on your nerves.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be really interesting to see what would happen if we got to control the media. We would like destroy their narrative in like a week or something. They can only keep this propaganda level up by just spitting out nonsense that's just based on emotion and simple like emotions. And yeah, it's based to prey on the white people's mind, a mind that's very like kind and open and so on. But now they censor us all over the internet, but if we actually got the time and place to do it, we would destroy their propaganda in a minute or two.
Yeah, it would be easy to point to, like, look at your own kids. They're white. Do you really want to make the world a worse place for them?
And some of them are probably evil like that, that they actually want to destroy it for them. But some people on the like the lower levels are probably like duped and just thinks that, but how would my children get a worse future if we let in some black people? They are just going to be black people and be nice and just have their lives. My children won't be affected. But then it's almost like they, if they look west, they have like an example, a pretty clear example that people have had the ability to follow for like 20 years, 30. But yeah, they don't really look west, it seems.
They have been looking west. You've seen headlines that we're not going to go the same route as Sweden for like 10, 15 years. And what are we doing? Even the fucking police is gone. Now that we're starting to have like gang violence here, they're going to Sweden to learn from the Swedish police how to handle it, because that's been working great.
Yeah, learn to handle the symptoms.
Like do nothing and just apologize for when you do something to them.
But it's all talk. It's like, yeah, they can look at Sweden and see, like, yeah, this is a problem. So we're going to talk about it from an early stage so people know that we don't want to be like Sweden. But of course, they're going to say in public that they don't want to be like Sweden. That would be like political suicide. So they're going to say that they don't want to be like Sweden. But in all actuality, the actual politics that they will actually work with and use will contribute to Finland becoming like Sweden.
Yeah, yeah, of course, but they could at least hide it a bit better.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't even try.
Yeah. But some of the regular people, they at least understand what's happening. And Swedish nationalists have understood what has happened for a long, long time.
Yeah, by the way, the UK government is basically now trying to pretend they care about immigration, and the country they chose as like their model to follow is actually Denmark. So yeah, they obviously think Mette Frederiksen has done a good job. Well, Halfdan, you probably know better than me how the Mette has done.
Yeah, she's given a lot of money to the Ukrainians.
Yeah, she's given.
They're soon gonna win, so yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, and I mean, it wasn't even really her. I mean, they, you know, like sort of the red parties or the bit slightly left wing parties. They, you know, they undertook those strong immigration policies, but you know, they were already in place. So, I mean, and I think it's too late for England. You know, you need something way more drastic. I mean, I don't see what just having much stricter immigration controls. I mean, it's not even illegal immigration now that's a problem. I mean, all these people with all their families that they have right to get in and things. I mean, it's just escalating out of control, right? And the traffic in the United Kingdom, just the hospital system, everything is. It's. I mean, you need way more radical than that. But yeah, I mean, it's just talking points for, yeah, the people, right? I think England and Denmark, they've always been quite close. You know, England has very looked positively on Denmark, so I can definitely see why we're like the role model for sure.
Yeah, it seems like a desperate attempt to like win some voters back from Nigel Farage, who is there looking like he's going to be the next the prime minister.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's what they've been doing for, you know, I mean, that's what all politicians have been doing for 80 years or whatever, right? They have a lot of talk and they, you know, they don't do anything, right? Well, they're so bogged down with other things and other agreements and things. But I mean, I don't know if they should be looking into Midtjylland and too much, because we actually just had our communal elections, which was really big for the Social Democrats, because it was last week. We voted on Thursday, I think it was. You know, it was like a popularity thing for Mette Frederiksen, who's been the prime minister for a few years now. And then they had a really big focus on they wanted a lot of Lord Mayors voted into place, and they have implemented a lot of like very populist policies. Like, for example, they lowered the price on coffee and sweets right before, like a few months ago. And they took it very seriously, but they had a huge loss in they lost Copenhagen for the first time in 100 years, the Social Democrats. They lost the mayor role, which and Copenhagen has like it's very special mayor. Like it has quite big political connotations as well, compared to other posts. And they've just been they've been going down. They lost mayor roles all over the country. It was a really bad election for them. So people don't like Midtjylland very much. And yeah, so I don't know how much the English should really look to her for sure. I can also say that the block that like the mayor of Copenhagen now is going to be someone from the Socialist People's Party. And it was like a huge coalition of little parties that got them voted out. So it was the Conservative People's Party, the DF, Dansk Folkeparti, and a lot of other left-wing party. Everyone was just, they wanted them gone. So it's quite interesting. They're sensing like a bit of fragmentation there. The parties that gained a lot in Copenhagen, at least, was like the Enhedslisten, which is like the Communist Party, or the Red-Green Alliance, and yeah, other socialist parties. So yeah.
Wow, I see.
Yeah, it's a bit up and down, but but I also have a dislike of centrist parties as well. I prefer actually people a bit more radical, because you get a bit more like you get the
swinging
a bit more, the politics, and then it can go either way. You know, it might be like the Red-Green Alliance now, but you know, if they do poorly, or you know, then in 4 or 8 years, right? You know, it's gonna swing the other way. So
true.
So yeah. I think that was that. We also had the Danish Democrats. They did quite well for a new party. They were quite popular. So
is that like an anti-immigration party?
Yeah, it is. It's like it's a newly formed one, and they go to a lot of like these farmer things, and you know, they're against like the CO2. You know, we're a really big farming country. They're against the CO2 taxes, and they want strict immigration. But I mean, who knows what that means, right? I mean, they all want controls on immigration, right?
The pattern in Europe is like the, I guess it's always been this way, but it's more blatant now that they are saying that they want to control immigration, and then they do the exact opposite, like they open the floodgates.
And it actually works. That's the sad part.
Yeah.
It actually works. Because when you own the media, you can just talk. And when you actually, like Trump, when you actually kick someone out with ICE, you do like edits of it, film it in a very like, in a way that's good for them. But in all actuality, you don't really kick that many out. But yeah, it's the same over Europe or Western Europe. You talk a lot and say you're going to do a lot of things, but you don't actually do it.
Yeah,
it's the same in Sweden when the new government got elected in 2022. They've talked a lot, and then the opposition talks a lot, and then nothing happens.
But, you know, you wonder a bit about the people who are just, you know, swinging back and forth. Like, I mean, some of these people in their 70s or 80s, and they've just been like changing, I don't know, going backwards and forwards if they're the independent, right? Between these parties over little things.
Yeah.
Right? It's getting fooled again and again and again.
Yeah, that's odd. There's always like new voters to fool. But yeah, that's a good question. How can these 60, 70-year-olds have been like fooled for 50 years? Straight.
Yeah, and I guess that's where the journalists come in, and they got to make new little interesting happenings in the country, right? So it feels new, right? I mean, if the film industry can do it, and why can't the media and the political establishment make you know, these things, make it feel new, you know, these new problems that are happening, these new conflicts abroad, and you got to vote this way now and this way, and I don't know.
Yeah, but you could see it. As much as I hate Trumpism, I actually think it's the worst thing to happen like politically in our lifetime. But I guess it's a step in the right direction. Now you at least have to talk a big game, even if you don't do anything. But maybe the next step is someone actually does something.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you know, Trump was a bit like, because it really felt like he had so many people behind him, you know, and he could do no wrong, because, you know, as soon as the media has an enemy, right, then everyone just backs the underdog guy. And that was Trump for a long time. You know, he couldn't do anything. But it seems recently, you know, he's gotten a lot of backlash. He's having a lot of trouble with these Epstein things. And so it's actually given me a bit of hope with Trump. Like, you know, people aren't, you know, just so blind in politics as I thought, for sure. So it's nice to see.
On that topic, JD Vance was at like a Turning Point USA like Q&A event, and you had these like Dick Raper types to come up and like ask like questions about Israel and stuff, and his answer to one of the questions was that he said this president is not controlled by Israel, basically implying that all the other presidents were controlled by Israel, which is pretty crazy compared to how politics have directed or like political discourse in the United States over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and that's a pretty that's a really absurd thing to say.
Haven't
like Jews said that he's the most Jewish president ever, but they feel that they need to talk like that, and they talk like that to try to control the opposition.
Exactly.
And yeah. Some ways, it works.
I mean, yeah, that just look at what Israel's been doing the last few years. I don't think even under Biden, he would have, Netanyahu would, you know, the pager bombings, you know, assassinations all throughout the Middle East, you know, occupation of Lebanon. They're building walls through, you know, parts of Lebanon now. It looks like they're going to claim it for Israel, and, you know, more presence on Golan Heights and what they've been doing in Palestine. It's, I think, yeah, we can safely say that's bullshit.
They have actually taken even more territory inside Syria now. And the tanks.
Yeah, I actually saw that on a map. They are going pretty far in.
The artillery cannons is like on a hill just a couple of kilometers outside of Damascus, which is the capital.
Yeah, it's absurd. And it's just, I mean, it's been discussed to death, but, you know, where, you know, all, you know, then we have our politicians in Europe just screeching, oh, you know, rogue politicians and blah, 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 blah. But I mean, you know, there's no pushback. It's so ridiculous. It's crazy. What a crazy world.
It's nothing but deep concern expressed in an overly complicated way. It means nothing. Which other country could act like Israel has been doing these last few years and not get, like, nuked from orbit?
The USA, maybe.
yeah, maybe. But that's the same thing, basically.
And those crazy Houthis as well. Going crazy. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, there is no country that has the privilege of Israel. And, just also all the criminals that are being, you know, who run away from countries after committing, you know, quite bad crimes, and then they get to go to Israel, and
lots of them are the pedophiles.
Sure. And organ harvesting as well is a big thing for Israel.
Yeah, the Trump stuff is sounds like it's far from the Nordics, but it's. That Trumpism is infecting all of European politics. So I think it's pretty relevant for us too.
Zionism, you mean?
Everything that comes with the Trump package. Zionism is part of it, of course, but...
Yeah.
Well, I mean the huge American think tanks, they spent huge amounts of money, you know, and a lot of our biggest, you know, opposition parties, and that's in quotes, by the way, you can't see it, but, you know, they're funded by them, by the Americans. Mm. So.
Yeah, I think when Trumpism dies, we might see some interesting changes.
Yeah.
Because I don't see them replacing him with some J.D. Vance or some other disgusting character.
Yeah, at least in the U.S. But in some way, it feels like Trumpism really hasn't been a thing in the Nordics. It's like even the Sweden Democrats are pretty... They probably like him in secret and, yeah. They probably like him overall, but it's not. I feel like Trumpism hasn't really had a public part in Sweden's political life.
But I can say Denmark
it's
is
all connected.
So. Denmark is the least favorite of. They did a poll, and Denmark was the least. What's it called? Favorable towards Trump out of all European countries. and even that, you know, you can say okay, Trumpism. Is not in Europe, okay, because Denmark doesn't like Trump, right? So, okay, there's no Trumpism in Denmark. But, you know, then you have all these other, you know, everyone talking negatively about Trump, and that's also, like, controlling the way people are, you know, thinking about things, and it's just the other direction, right? When everyone's, you know, it's always Trump, but in the other direction, so...
It's all connected. And many of these, like, right-wing... people overall, even though they don't really talk about Trump in public, a lot of his ideas are pretty rampant. This whole Zionist snake is controlled by the US, after all. It's pretty interesting that you mentioned organ harvesting, Halvdan. I actually got sentenced for hate speech, and one of the points was that I was the legal publisher, or how you say, for are the Swedish website for the Nordic Resistance Movement. And in one of the podcasts, someone said that the Jews are doing organ harvesting. I had to pay a bit for that.
But is Israel is a multicultural state. It has Arabs and Bantu, whatever people. Everyone.
So what Halvdan said is okay because he said Israel, or guy he said Jews. So
Who's
he
really
also said quote that they were parasites and so on. But I don't know
my hate
that,
level.
That's hate speech. Guys. Yeah.
Yeah, some guy got just got raided in Germany for calling a politician a tech parasite. So, free speech in Germany is pretty much non-existent.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, do you guys have anything more on, like, news or something like that?
No, not really.
I think that's it.
Yeah. We almost finished with Beowulf last time, but we have we finished with Beowulf killing Grendel's mother, he like took a sword he found on the bottom of the sea because he went down to kill her, and I believe that this sword that he found was made by giants. All other swords couldn't kill Grendel's mother, but this sword could, because it was made by giants, so he actually killed her. And it's after this that he like became king and so on, I believe, over Denmark. And and the whole like the end part of this saga is regarding the dragon. And what basically happens is that I believe somebody steals from the dragon, a bit Tolkien inspired, or Tolkien was inspired by that, I believe. And the dragon basically does what dragons do in European culture, run rampant or fly rampant and burn down villagers. One pretty cool quote I have is this: an old night ravager that one which burning seeks a burial mound, the smooth dragon of malice who flies by night encompassed in fire found the hoard standing open. And then earth dwellers fear him much. He must seek a hoard in the earth, where old in winters he will guard heathen gold, though he gains nothing from it. Another quote is, the beginning was fearful to people in the land, and was the ending death for their king. The Finn spouted fire, burned bright houses. The glow of fire stood out, a horror to the people. That terrible sky flyer wish to leave nothing alive. And this is like, I believe, like 10 or 20 years after the killing of Grendel's mother. But it's basically because...
50 years, isn't it? 50 years.
It's a long time.
When he's king of the Geats.
Yeah.
He's learned a lot from the Danes on how to run a well-running country.
And
they made him king of Sweden, of the Geats, obviously, after that.
Yeah. Another quote is, near and far was seen the dragon's violence, how that destroyer hated and humbled the Geat people. The people of the land were enveloped in fire. At dawn, he darted back into his cave. He trusted in his war and in his cavern. Yeah, so he flies rampant and destroys everything. And that's where Beowulf has had enough. So, quote, then Beowulf made his last boast. I ventured many battles in my youth. Now old, I will seek another. Try again for glorious deeds, if that avenger will come out. And then, quote, his shield protected life and body for a shorter time than the prince had hoped. That was the first day he was not granted glory in battle. And that's basically where he tries to fight the dragon, and his shield almost breaks or don't protect him as it should, because dragon fire isn't really a great thing to be exposed to.
I agree completely.
But a funny thing with this dragon fight is that he has his like advisor with him called Wiglaf, and they had more soldiers also, but they actually fled. And that's, I think, one of the reasons for Beowulf actually dying from the poison, from the wound he got from the dragon. And so what happens is he kills the dragon, but he gets bit in the neck and then dies from the poison. But here's another quote. Then Wiglaf advanced through the death fumes, wore his helmet to help his lord. He spoke these words: "Dear Beowulf, may you accomplish all well, as you did in youth, as I have heard tell. Don't surrender the glory of your life. Defend now with all your strength your brave deeds. I will help." And this is before he kills the dragon. And it's quote, "Then the war king remembered past deeds, struck mightily with his sword so that it stuck in the dragon's head. Negling, the great sword of Beowulf, ancient and shining, broke, failed in battle. Fate had not granted that the iron sword would help." So he actually like breaks his sword. And this is, I believe, when he gets bit and quote, "Then the terrible dragon a third time rushed, hot and battle grim. He bit Beowulf's neck with sharp tusks. Beowulf was wet with life's blood. Blood gushed in waves." And this is when he actually kills the dragon, quote, "Then the king controlled his senses, drew his battle knife, bitter and battle sharp, which he carried on his mail, and cut the dragon through the middle. The enemy fell, strength had driven out life. The two kinsmen together had cut down the enemy, so should a warrior do. That was Beowulf's last victory, his last work in this world." So everything, he's like shield and sword, everything gets destroyed. He gets bitten, but he actually managed to kill the dragon with a knife. But then the dragon has poison, so that's what gets him in the end. The two last quotes I have are, "The wound began to swell and burn, the venom seethed, the poison inside, that poison inside. The king, aged in sorrow, beheld the gold and spoke, 'I thank the Wonder King, the ruler of all, that I could win this for my people before my death day. I have traded my old life for the people's needs.'" The last quote is pretty telling on how a leader should be. That he says he has traded his old life for the people's needs. Modern politicians trade the people's needs for due money. He didn't actually do that. So it's a good story in that way.
Yeah, so he sort of become
how you should act.
He sort of become more like duty bound rather than, you know, he started like very, you know, it was heroism that drove him. Like he went to another country and to Denmark, and he went to fight Grendel and his mother, and now it's for his people, right? So he's changed a lot. And then you have the Wiglaf as well. I don't know what you guys' impression of him, but it seemed like he was, you know, like this young guy that Beowulf was in the past. So by him staying, you know, it's like Beowulf is there once again, right? So like, you know, it carries on that, you know, that all everything he had before. I don't know if you agree with that or what.
Yeah, I see Wiglaf as like a trusted advisor. In the movie, at least, the one I talked about last time, Wiglaf becomes king after Beowulf. I don't really remember if that's how it is in the story or so. But...
yeah, so his ideals kind of carry on a bit in a way through Wiglaf. And all the other ones, they kind of ran. So
yeah, they ran away. They got exiled by Wiglaf after, I believe.
Okay.
When they ran. Yeah, Wiglaf was... he was always by Beowulf's side. through the whole story, or a lot of it at least. And
And then actually, the treasure, is that something we're going to talk about, or
no, you can talk about it. I don't really have that much on it.
Yeah, because they buried the treasure afterwards, didn't they? So I mean, there are some themes there, maybe.
The dragon had treasures.
Yeah, the dragon had a huge amount of treasure, and actually, Beowulf, he wanted to see the treasure before he died, and I think he was shown the treasure right before. But when he died, Wiglaf decided to bury it all again with him. So I don't know what that means, if that means like maybe he's, you know, like, because, you know, it died with, you know, the king, you know, a king needs to deal out the treasure, and the king was dead.
Yeah, and in the afterlife, you might need a treasure.
Yeah, maybe. But it also could mean, you know, there's all this treasure that was buried, and it led to a lot of destruction, and so, you know, it was useless. All this treasure did nothing. Mm. So just, yeah, it's gone again. I don't know. I'm not really
Yeah, no, but it's an interesting story, and it isn't really that long. It's a pretty short story. As long as you take, if you read an adaptation and not a translation, it's actually pretty easy to go through. There's movies, the famous animated one. There's one a bit older. There's a lot of like videos on YouTube who summarizes the saga and so on. But it's this like... Sure. Classic Nordic or Germanic saga.
Yeah.
I don't really have that much.
Yeah, I saw a lot of.
We've been going for quite a time.
Yeah. Just to conclude it, I guess I saw a lot. Like, there's a lot of cyclical themes as well in it. Like, you know.
Yeah.
In our, you know, in the European past, you know, everything was very cyclical, and you know, you had the Ragnarok that would come, and then it would restart again, and then, you know, in a new age, and it kind of felt like that as well with Wiglaf and you know, the monsters and the chaos, and then it just goes around the circle, and then Wiglaf is there to take it up again, and it you know, and you know, the dragon god was so strong because all his soldiers, they ran away, right? So that you have this, you know, this decaying age. I don't know. It feels a lot like there's some religious themes as well in there. But yeah, that's for people to think about at home.
Absolutely. If anyone doesn't have anything else, I think we can actually wrap the episode up.
I guess next episode we will have a lot of some activities to talk about. Some of us are going to some marches and some other interesting stuff. Maybe something else than just and actually no, scratch that. Probably be a lot of and retards also that you have to face on the streets.
Yeah, we need the Finnish news. Don't forget.
Yeah.
Gotta keep up with Finland.
What a shit show this is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we probably have some interesting stories to tell in the next episode. We usually record and release our episodes in the end of the month, and that's where Yule is. So, yeah, I don't really know when the next episode's gonna come. I believe we're gonna aim for next month, but we'll see. Absolutely, we can finish there if anybody doesn't have anything else. Great, then you'll probably hear from us next month. We'll hope so, at least. So have a nice day. Bye
bye.
Bye bye.